Hi and welcome to The Cyber Show, where in this episode, we're on the streets of Britain asking people if they'd like to take a digital self-defence class. Helen and I stopped a few residents of Southampton in the city park to ask them what they thought about protecting their digital lives. Have people heard of digital self-defence? Do they know of classes in their area? Who teaches it? And who would pay those teachers? The government? Or is it down to the individual to look after themselves online and protect their own devices?
It's about personal cybersecurity. I see you both like kind of out with your phones and stuff.
Yeah.
And are you worried about hackers and people stealing your data and things like that? Is it ever on your mind?
I guess, but it's not much. It's unavoidable in this world, really.
Hey, it's unavoidable. I never heard that one, right? Do you guys do kung fu or karate or any martial arts?
Yeah.
So you're like down with the idea of personal physical self-defense,
yeah?
Have you ever heard the idea of digital self-defense?
Yes, I have.
Install virus protection and stuff on your computers.
VPNs,
keep your passwords secure, different passwords, each devices. Don't tell anyone your passwords.
I mean, all good stuff. Did you learn this at school? You taught formally at school.
Yeah.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
Year 10, year 9?
A lot of years. Like, they do like workshops frequently in schools, which is helpful.
So you've got that as on your secondary school and things like that. But for people who never had that, do you think that the idea of digital self-defence classes in public or like church halls or whatever, does that sound like a good idea?
I mean,
send your mum or like send your, you know, granny.
Everyone who uses like technology or like phones and stuff should know.
Have you ever heard of the phrase digital self-defence?
No, perhaps I have.
Do you do any martial arts or anything like that?
No, I don't.
Okay, but you kind of get the idea that it's a bit like kind of going to kung fu classes,
okay,
but to help you protect your phone and things like that. Does that sound like a good idea?
I think internet is a very dangerous place that a lot of people want to do a lot of harm, and being able to protect yourself against that can only be a good thing.
Uh-huh.
I've never been hacked.
You've never been hacked.
Yeah, it's not something I worry about, really.
You don't think about it very much.
I work in IT anyway.
You're an IT guy.
Yeah.
And the same.
I don't.
Okay. Because you've got him. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. You know, digital self defense rather than physical self defense. Does that resonate as an idea for you? Does that?
Yeah, I mean, most of what I get is from commercial, so from the business, so I see it, and any education I've had on it is through what they deliver. So I guess if you haven't got that and you're not exposed to that, then that would be good for a lot of people to know about.
You have smartphones.
I don't, no.
You do. Do you worry about getting hacked or having your data lost online and things
sometimes,
like that?
Sometimes, yes.
Have you ever heard of digital self-defence classes?
I might have heard of it, but no.
It's not a smartphone.
Oh, you've got the same as me?
It's a normal phone. It's a normal phone.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, with smartphones and things like that, people get hacked all the time?
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, you've got to be aware, especially old people. You know, I mean, I wouldn't class myself at all, but, you know, really, you know, like 70s and 80s. I watch things like that on programme, you know, Rip Off Britain and all these scammers, you know, people with their pensions and all that, you know, to do some work and all that. And it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. It's all right having technology, but it's dangerous. Like the internet, it's dangerous. You know what I mean? It's useful, but it's dangerous, if you know what I mean. If you don't know what you're doing, you could land on something and get yourself into trouble. But, you know, that's what hackers do. You know what I mean? Then personal information, I think it should be more... It's like, for instance, I've had my card by my bank, right? And it's swipe, right? Now, anybody, because it's happened to me, you see, 2 years ago.
Do you worry about getting hacked or having your data stolen online and things like that?
Yeah. I think everybody does, don't they?
Have you ever heard of digital self-defence or civic cybersecurity?
No. I probably should do because my work's always on about it, but yeah.
Oh, okay. You hear about it at work. Do they sort of want to give you training or something like that, maybe?
We do training on digital eagles and is it phishing?
Phishing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And all stuff like that. And it's just a cyber security. And we do it every year. I think we do it.
Like a refresher course or something like that.
Yeah.
What about people who don't have access to things like that, like maybe younger children or older people who haven't got a job, how might they hear about those sorts of things, and do you think they should maybe have classes on it?
Well, Digital Eagles is done by Barclays Bank, mm-hmm. so the kids can go on there as well and do quizzes and things. So. And
my dad's 82, and during lockdown he learnt how to FaceTime. But every time we tell him he's been hacked, you know, somebody said sent friend requests, it changes his password. It has to go to someone else to do it because he can't do it, doesn't he? Well, there's no patience, to be fair. That's it.
Do you worry about getting hacked and having your data stolen and things like that?
I don't know if I worry about it. I would say that it's possibly kind of a threat that's always there, but I don't worry about it in the same way I don't worry about getting hit by a car.
Okay. It's a hazard of modern life, isn't it?
It's something that can happen, but it doesn't give you up at night.
Digital self-defence, have you ever heard of anything like that?
I think for the older generation, it should definitely be a thing, because they're a little less informed when it comes to computers, emails, phones. Like, you know, I had a call the other day asking me about my phone and to do with PC world, and I'm like, well, they don't.
It didn't sound right.
No, it didn't sound right immediately, but they wouldn't know that. So I think that there are some programming out there. Angela Rippon does one about cyber stuff, which is on BBC.
You've seen Rip Off Britain as well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So they were, and that's geared towards like daytime viewing, which is the older generation.
Yeah. Do you listen to Click? So BBC Radio 4, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I've not heard of that. But yeah, I mean, I think it definitely should be, you know, like years ago, we used to have national advertising, stay away from, you know, fireworks, do this. Or so, like, there should be advertising, government advertising,
okay,
to kind of get people a little bit more clued up.
Obviously, it's wrong.
I'm sorry?
Obviously, it's wrong.
It's wrong, yeah.
It's horrible to think somebody's got your personal details.
Yeah.
Abusing that power. But why isn't there better security with the banks, Amazon, etc., when you buy the stuff?
It worries you.
Of course it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I hope they do something about it.
What do you think of the idea of digital self-defense classes that would, a bit like physical martial arts, but to help people protect themselves online and with their phones and things?
Well, I think it's a good idea. Yeah. A bit old myself.
I mean, what do you do for your digital self-defence needs?
I mean, generally hiding all of your information online, right? Like VPN and stuff.
Have like a million different passwords.
Yeah. Okay. As big a password as possible. I don't know.
Sometimes use the recommended strong passwords and those things, but man, they're hard to remember, you know what I'm saying?
Are you at two-factor on your phones?
Two-factor?
Do you do that? Two-factor?
That's the email and, like, code check and stuff, right? But I don't do it for enough, to be honest with you.
You should do it, right? So you can't have your phone nicked unless you nick both my computers in my house, nick my phone, then you can get into my account. So you'd have to literally steal all three devices at once to even attempt it.
Oh, I'm, like, a super paranoid fella, so I've got, like, my phone is always, I do this like every 2 seconds.
Right.
So like, I guess my safety is that I always know where it is, like always.
Do you think the government have a role in providing something that we might call civic cybersecurity or digital self-defense to children?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Now, you know, sadly, it may be too late.
But if there were classes like that taught this, like kind of like a digital dojo, like a martial arts metaphor, right? You go there to do digital self-defense and get like kind of, you get your phone hardened up and stuff like that.
I'd be interested. It's for your own safety, right?
Yeah, it's for your own safety, online. Yeah.
Nah, but the biggest question is should the government pay for that? Or do you think people would dip in their pockets, and how much would you pay to go to a class like that that was like run by hackers to teach you how to
not get scammed, not get hacked?
That's a tough one, isn't it, though? Because like because we live in such like a digital age, and it's like that's only just going to go further and further. It's not like we're going to regress from like that sort of stuff. So like, you know, and I guess it depends how you see it, because like when it comes to like actual, let's say, physical crimes, you like, it's almost like you really want the government to be involved, right? You want them to step in, you know, and I guess that goes in with like the police and stuff like that,
right?
So it's kind of like, I guess it's like, where are the lines, really? It's like,
I suppose where The internet's like a basic necessity nowadays. There isn't a person really that doesn't access it.
You almost
it should
need
be,
it.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just common sense really these days. Think of how many old people who get scammed all the time online. But you could always learn like more about it, you know?
Yeah.
Better
to I like that so many things now, like whether it's like jobs or just day-to-day living, everything like that. Just, it's all like do it online.
All in your phone as well. Yeah. Too much stuff in one place, isn't it? How do you protect your phone? Do you worry about hackers getting in and stealing your data?
I certainly do. Yeah. So I do have forms of security. I prefer, in particular, McAfee, which I've used for maybe best part of 30 years. I have been hacked from time to time, but I've been able to deal with it immediately. The worst case this year, my Amazon account was hacked, and I don't approve of their one log-on procedure.
For more ordinary people, how do you think they might learn about these sorts of things?
Unfortunately, they don't. And you read stories of people losing not just a few pounds, but tens of thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm an old man. I'm 85, but I've been abreast of development of computers and computer systems since they were introduced back in the late 70s, 80s. So I am aware, but I do feel for those people who have not had the opportunity that I have.
Do you think the government should pay for things like that, or do you think people ought to go out on their own volition and figure it out?
So I think it's a bit of both, right? So I think the government needs to be there to build the framework to look at those macro level things and be able to put schemes, programs, some of the things into that, and also advise and enable the public at large to be able to know what it means. What are the common scams? How do they protect themselves? What are those kind of sixth sense spidey type feelings when they're like, things aren't quite right, I don't know what to do? And also to kind of help to protect some of the more vulnerable in society. So again, the people who are vulnerable are the older people. They are the people who perhaps have learning difficulties, the other things, can't quite see things in the same way that other people can. And they're all often sometimes isolated, so they don't have the same community, same people to ask, this is a bit dodgy, or I'm not quite sure what I should do here, how do I get
mentors? Or
exactly. So having I think the government has a role in that. I think society has a role in helping those people as well, and just being equipped to been equipped to defend themselves.
Yeah. Do you think that the government have a role in this? I mean, there is sort of year 10 education for children in cybersecurity.
I think they do to an extent, but I don't think they've got the expertise to actually protect us anywhere, because IT is such an affluent industry. They can't afford the people they need.
The government can't afford the good people because they're all getting such good salaries in the business.
It's the education side of it as well, because we just don't have in the UK the education in IT that we need.
No.
You look at somewhere like India, they're raised on it.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a huge, huge industry over there. I think it's just going to drop off more and more in the UK.
Is it something you think that the government should help people with, given the amount of cybercrime that there is these days? If there were classes in your local area, do you think it's the kind of thing that you'd attend?
I might, yeah.
Is it something that you think that children should be...
I think children should know about it, yes, definitely.
You seem quite vigilant, but how do you think other people who are a bit less so might find out about these things? Is it word of mouth, or could they go to classes to learn about
it? I think information, you know, leaflets, I mean, they you know, it's not wasting money because they'll get recycled. But they should have a booklet, something to make them aware, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Automatically. Like, they shouldn't have to pay for it. It should be set up by government, you know what I mean, to give them that kind of information so they don't get conned, you know what I mean?
Do you think the government should have any input, or do you think the government should pay for these kind of civic cybersecurity courses?
I don't think the government necessarily know that that's something that they should be worried about. But why not? I think with it being something that affects everybody, or can affect anybody, yeah, possibly, why not?
Also, it would probably save the money in the long term, because old people getting hacked happens regularly, or old people getting scammed costs them a hell of a lot of police time.
Costs society a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Not only do they often not get their money back, but then the police have got to try and the banks have got to try and...
Do you think that the government should do more like create classes like that? Do you think the government should pay for things like that, or would people pay for it out of their pockets if they were interested, do you think?
I'm a bit controversial. I think, you know, some people, they put themselves in a situation. I think people need a bit more accountability rather than being babied by the government, to be honest with you, because the government can't figure everything out, you know, they can't hold your hand, because otherwise we end up in a dictatorship like in North Korea.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So you don't want the government telling people how to manage their cybersecurity or paying for it?
Well, I think people should be smart enough to figure out for themselves, you know.
How would they find that out? I mean, just imagine, how would they find out these classes to educate themselves?
Well, that would be up to them, really. I mean, you know, if they figure out, we're on the internet quite a lot, come across stories from, you know, wherever it may be, maybe in the news, maybe on social media, that we're getting tracked down and people are getting hacked or whatever it might be, stolen identities, maybe we should look into how we can defend ourselves against it.
Yeah.
Rather than asking someone else to defend us for us, you know.
How much do you think people would pay to go and do like a digital self-defence class?
15, 20.
15 or 20.
I don't think people would pay for that.
You don't think people would pay for that?
I don't think people would pay.
That's interesting, because some people say that and some people say what you said is like about that. Do you think that they're just thinking that will never happen to me?
Yeah, I guess so. They just see it as an empty threat because it's never happened to them.
Yeah.
It's been accepted into society. Like, oh yeah, it happens. Like, you know.
Wow, so they're quite sort of resigned to it. They just, like, I mean, you just said to me earlier, well, was it inevitable, did you say?
Yeah.
Something like that,
So.
It depends what's in the course. I mean, if I'm not too sure what a digital self-defense is myself. But I guess so, because, you know, if someone feels like they need it, then they will take the course.
Do you think people would pay, and if so, how much do you think they would pay, and how many hours might they commit? I mean, would you give up an hour a week if you saw a class like that and pay, like, I don't know, like 15, 20 quid for the class?
So I think that's an interesting idea. I think people need to see that as a value and as an investment, which means they need to understand what the dangers are and what the cost is.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure people necessarily understand the risk, so won't necessarily prioritise the payment. And again, looking at the people who are at risk, they're often the vulnerable people and the lower incomes. And so any sort of payment is then... especially in a cost of living crisis, it's, okay, if I'm going to make money for this, what am I not going to do?
Yeah.
And again, people generally are really poor at risk assessments and understanding where the risk is and being able to manage that effectively. So what I think that would end up in is probably quite low take up and people not necessarily, and the people really needing it.
The ones who don't get access.
Won't have access.
Yeah.
Not so much, no.
Yeah.
I think we're completely reliant on the companies that produce the apps for our own security.
So you don't think that ordinary people can do very much to protect themselves?
No, because the only way they can do that is by using other apps or other inventions. You know, the average person just won't know whether they're actually protecting themselves or making things worse.
Yeah.
If something's advertised in the right way,
yeah,
then you're just going to fall into that trap every time.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't think they would pay anything out. I think they would be better if it was free. I run a sheltered housing complex and there's a few people in there and I'm sure they would come, but they would only come if it didn't cost anything.
Yeah, because the most vulnerable people who need it are the ones that have got no money.
Yeah.
I don't think people will pay, not in complete honesty, but I think if you put that kind of thing into schools, starting with the youth, then that then leads through, because they go home, they start talking to parents, it then starts feeding through.
Yeah.
So I think probably, from my point of view, it'd probably be start young and then try and build it up from there to see. And I think maybe once the awareness and the ball started rolling, then you could then look at other stuff. But I think initially people wouldn't necessarily want to pay for that, because they see it as that people should be telling them that anyway, not that they have to.
People should be telling them that anyway.
To find that out.
A lot of people have said, well, only ask people who've already been hacked.
Yeah.
They might be more interested.
Exactly. So that's my opinion. I think ironically, in the digital age, people are more likely to seek the information online.
Yeah.
Which is, it would be great if they could pay someone for that service, but
think there is probably a market for people who are less sort of digitally aware.
Especially older people. I mean, the Apple Store hosts classes on how to use their iPhones, and everyone's grandparents go and work it out to FaceTime. So, you know, in that way, it could be.
You've seen that market there for some older people already?
I guess it depends on the price, I guess, yeah. But I don't know how much awareness there was.
I guess that if it was government subsidised, it could be like 10 or 20 quid or something like that for a session.
Yeah.
It's quite cheap, really.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're talking about, you know, like, I predominantly lived on a council estate all my life. 20, 30 quid. It's a lot of money. That's a week's worth of food in some families. So I don't know if they would be able to afford to do that, leaving that area, people that don't have the money to do such and so forth.
Yeah, makes sense. And it's the more poorer people that tend to be more vulnerable as well.
Yeah, to some degree, but I think without education, that's what keeps it. I used to be a former teacher, so.
You were a teacher?
I used to be, yeah. So teaching is a big thing for me, and I constantly bang on about education.
I'd be interested, but personally, I'd say 20 is a bit steep.
Okay. I was thinking 20 is a bit steep.
How long would a lecture be?
It could be an hour, it could be a couple of hours. It depends on how much people can absorb. See, some people will be like happy, and they haven't got the attention span for 2 hours.
You've also got to depend what kind of learners people are, you know what I mean?
Let's say it was just a one off thing. Let's say it was like
I think that'd be fine, because I suppose the benefits thing, it would give you, really. Like 20 quid to save maybe 200 or 2,000 pounds going.
I bet it would pay for itself at some point.
If it was just like a one time session and it was like, yeah, straight to the point, because lifetime wise it would probably save you like so much like money and just trouble, really.
But at the same time, the only people you're going to get doing it are the people who are interested in doing it.
I guess that's the hard part, isn't it? Because it's just hard for like people to get invested sometimes and stuff like that. It's hard for people to get invested in something that they don't really understand, you know?
Yeah.
What I mean,
that's a really good comment, man, really good.
Yeah.
How do you imagine those working? How much time do you think people would be able to spare? How much hours per week?
You have to put out a hook to catch the fish. Uh-huh. In order to do that, please target, in the first instance, those people who have already been caught out. Target those people, then they ask them then to share their experience with their associates. Target the victims first.
If it was held in community centres, church halls, that kind of thing, and it was maybe an hour or 2 hours a week, how much do you think people would be prepared to pay? Or do you think they would expect the government to pay for that kind of thing?
I can't see people be willing to pay for their own. They should do. That's the principle. They should do. However, I think there would be a reluctance.
Even those who've been hacked.
Even those who have been hacked. People say, well, it won't happen to me again, you know. Mm. I was in the Air Force, and accidents, you tend to think, always happens to the other guy, not himself. And it's that same mentality. People don't think they're going to be hacked.
No.
And you know, AI is going to make it a whole lot worse.
Yes, definitely. It's going to be great for social manipulation and for scamming people.
Indeed. I mean, I use AI, and it's worrying what it can do.
How would you find out about things like this? Like leaflets through the door or online?
You see a lot of this stuff online, to be fair. Like, you get like, I mean, I do anyway. I see advertisements for stuff like data security, and stuff like that.
The only times I really see anything like that is through Facebook ads. Facebook and sites like that, it's, not exactly the most trustworthy thing in the first place.
It's almost like a double-edged sword in a way, because normally when you see stuff like that, you're actually hesitant to click on it.
You think that they're already trying to pull their own scam.
Yeah, you're like, this might be a fast one, you know. So you're always a bit like, oh, I don't know.
It's hard to know what exactly to trust on the internet.
You're listening to The Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk.
Kate, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
What does it mean when people seem desperate for help, but they're unwilling to pay? What does that say about their relation to technology?
I wonder whether it says that it's almost as if the technology that I use is someone else's problem. So because people feel potentially disempowered by technology, they aren't actually able to take much ownership of it, and therefore aren't potentially willing to educate themselves about how they could use technology in a safer, more private, more ethical way.
This approach to technology, in which it's forced upon people in a non-ownership capacity, I've put here that it heralds the neo-communism in the World Economic Forum's phrasing of you'll own nothing and be happy.
It makes me think of ownership in terms of not only material goods, and I think that in the digital world, it complicates things so much. The fact that, I guess, many people kind of store documents in the cloud, and there is this question of ownership.
People don't own records or books anymore.
Yeah.
They have a file on a Kindle they stream it from Spotify.
But also, it makes me think of ownership in terms of taking responsibility. And what is meant by that is that I can acknowledge that, I can think about that, I can take responsibility for that, and I can be a little bit reflective and honest. But I don't think that people are any of those things with regards to their technology.
When you say set up, you're saying it's not a blind set of economic circumstances, but the system is designed to exclude and keep those people down.
Probably.
And what I'm thinking is that, you know, by analogy, the tech ecosystem is very much designed to inhibit people from technological autonomy.
Yeah. But where I was also going is that I think a lot of people go from a sense of feeling powerless in the face of not only the technology that they're using and also the state of the economic and housing market, but they also go to jobs where they are actively disempowered with regards to the technology that they use as well.
Let's stick with this theme of external disempowerment, but also self-disempowerment, mm-hmm. or lack of self-care, lack of personal responsibility. I don't want to end up sounding like Jordan Peterson here, so maybe I'm using strong words, but I mean, we hear this all the time, and I don't know how true it is, that people don't care about privacy, and that people will even denounce it themselves as if they're ashamed in the face of surveillance capitalism. And they say things like, well, I've got nothing important, I'm nothing special. And I think that seems to indicate a lack of dignity or self-value.
I think it does too, but I think that there is a defensiveness about that. And what the defensiveness is that they're not able to imagine things that they might want to keep private. I wonder whether actually what's going on is conflict avoidance. So when people repeatedly have their privacy intruded upon, and they understand that the individual or group or state or people doing that invasion aren't going to be able to hear, go away, stop intruding, it becomes something that's avoided.
You're listening to the Cyber Show on www.cybershow.uk.
Teach the right people for the right reasons.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd kind of hope that in a digital self-defense class, we'd have exactly the opposite balance. People would be a little bit kind of circumspect about the hacking, the red team
stuff. Or someone that's been hacked before and they've got like motivations to stop it from happening again. And they
see somebody showing them that, and they basically see me breaking a window and going into someone's house and going, that's not on, mate. You know, that's that.
Yeah.
I don't want to learn about how to do that. I want to learn about how to have a stronger window.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I mean, that was, I thought the response was interesting and good. One question that was in there is, do they trust and believe in us? And, well, obviously, when we were walking around the park on a sunny day and Helen's doing her smile, there was, you know, there was warmth there that wasn't necessarily something that there would be if they were responding to an advert on Facebook. One thing that I thought was kind of quite interesting is those lads who said they wouldn't trust anything to do with security advertised online anyway, because they just assume it was a scam.
Yeah, yeah, because I suppose as well, when you're advertising in those spaces of social media, in fact, my mum mentioned it. She was like, I've seen so many of these like cybersecurity adverts popping up. I'm like, my instant reaction was, that's dodgy. I don't know. It's just something about advertising to that audience through something like Facebook. It's like, what's your real underlying cause for this? Is it just like a quick money grab? Or they don't seem very well composed. So I guess it's kind of put people off in general of like, oh no, I'm not going to click on that. Anything with the buzzword cybersecurity just causes instant panic in everyone.
I think you're right. I think it's like seeing adverts for, you know, medical stuff that just people just skip past it because they go, ew, I don't know about that.
Yeah, yeah.
The security in general has got a kind of slightly slimy, scuzzy tone to, you know, its implications. It's all a bit gangster, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Although I hope from our aspect, obviously it's really easy to tell once you're on the course, but it's that initial getting the people onto the course in the first place that I guess we've got to balance quite well. But I think our approach is different in the sense that it's not, you know, that overall sense of like corporate bullshit or, you know, the really obvious stock photos that they use in advertising for cybersecurity with like a padlock on a keyboard or something like that.
Yeah, sure. Well, obviously, firstly, we're for real. Secondly, we genuinely have those people's interests at heart. And we're trying to do something that no one else is doing, because all of that corporate cybersecurity is just more guards for the castle. And we're trying to do something which I actually become increasingly thinking is impossible. But I'll tell you why more. Right now, I mean, why not? Because the main takeaways were that people generally think that other people need lessons in cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like everyone but me, kind of, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, the old Air Force chap, he said that. I heard that from the younger people too as well. And then I did a little session with Kate and we talked about sort of that projection or that, I'm not sure, that thinking
refraction almost.
Yeah, it's other people's problem. It's other people's problem, and it's not going to happen to me. And then they always say, well, old people need it, don't they? Or young people need it. But it's always some. They identify some vulnerable out group that's not there, not like me, because it won't happen to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of in a way, it's almost like why people agree with climate change, but then won't vote for green policies and that kind of thing. It's like I don't want to give up. You know, I don't want to suffer from that. But yeah, it's beneficial for everyone. But I think a lot of people don't realise.
Okay, so then there was like some more takeaways from that, which were that they wouldn't pay. You know, people were, oh yeah, that would be great, that would be brilliant, amazing. So how much would you pay for that? Nothing.
Yeah.
And I kind of talked with Kate about that a little bit, because that happens in therapy. People, they desperately want help, then they won't pay. And there's something going wrong with their sense of self-respect or self-ownership there.
It's one of those things, isn't it, when you put money to it. And one of the things I'm worried about is if we underprice that kind of education, it almost demeans the value of it.
It's a common
but then also
it's a common business mistake to underprice your product. But
yeah,
I think if we're honest about who we're targeting, those are actually people who can't afford it. So there has to be some clever funding mechanism that involves arts grants or business development grants or some. We have to subsidize it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, we would have some corporate clients that we can do training for, and then this kind of civic side will be our more charitable arm, where we'll want to break even on cost and not expect much more than that, really.
That's one model, isn't it, is to have the corporate gigs subsidize the civic gigs. But I mean, I don't know if that's a state. First of all, it's certainly not scalable.
and I don't know if it's sustainable. Right. We'll just, but anyway, lots of food for thought and stuff to work out, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we had, the pre-recorded training sessions and then we just tentatively available to answer questions, and that would be a really good way to scale it, because our time is then, we put all the investment of time in at the beginning to create these kind of courses, sell them for cheaper, because our time is not required constantly to deliver them as much as they would be sort of in person. And obviously, we'll have a balance of, we might get some really good gigs to do in person with like live training, but international scaling, I think, using something like Moodle would be a really good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got to have a kind of blended mixed delivery. So there was one surprising result, which was that many people are already better educated than we might suppose. And I was absolutely blown away by some of the stuff that, I didn't expect people to just come back with, I did that at school, these are the top 10 kind of cyber safety tips.
But you expect someone to be a certain way and then the complete opposite.
People always surprise you. I found that throughout all of my teaching. Those suppositions that you go to the classroom with, that they get, those bubbles get burst really quickly. And the more you kind of go to the general public, less academic, just more ordinary people, the more so. I mean, so you find somebody who works in Tesco and then you have an opinion of them, and then they finally tell you that, 15 years ago they were head of research and development at some big company. And you're like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm working at Tesco's because I'm a mum.
yeah. And that's a really common case as well. It's, you get all these really skilled and clever people, and then you find them in the most mundane situations, and you think, oh, what such a waste of skill of that person.
It's endemic. We just have this colossal waste of human capital in Britain, and I think in the world now. And those are people that I would really like to engage with, because then they will become ambassadors and they'll go out and spread the knowledge and things like that.
Definitely, yeah.
There was a couple of, this point came up, was is digital self-defense really a good metaphor? And most people seem to say, it's just kung fu, but there was one guy, and he's not in the recording, I think he might have been law enforcement, I got the impression that he was a copper, and he had a very good point, and he said, because he was talking about digital policing and stuff, and he said, well, most people go for martial arts as a leisure, a fitness activity, a hobby. You don't really have to defend against, violent assaults in the street every day and have to karate chop someone's windpipe every time you walk through the park. I don't think it really quite works like that. So it's not a good metaphor. And I thought, well, that's an interesting point.
I guess it's quite difficult to gauge, because when you put it that way and you think about how deeply ingrained technology is in everybody's life, whether they like it or not, whether it's because someone's a librarian and they need to use the computers and run the Facebook groups so people know when they're open now, or you're just at home working from home and then you need to use that technology. It doesn't matter what you're doing, everyone's basically using a computer or something computerized. And I guess that's a really interesting point, because when I also think of self-defense, I'm thinking, well, I'm not sat here all the time thinking I've got to defend myself. It's not a very frequent thing. So that's I kind of agree with him in that sense. But maybe we're just comparing it in the wrong way.
I think so. So I did think about that for a little bit. I thought, what you're saying is right, is it's generally more reactive. As the Air Force chap said, people respond after they've been hurt, so it's reactive. They're going to kind of be interested in defense, equestrian containment after the stable door has been open, we, in terms of marketing and appeal to people, maybe those who have been hacked, people who've been recently burned, are good candidates.
I guess it's kind of there's this very, very true thing which is said, a company gets hacked and suddenly their cybersecurity budget goes 300 times bigger than it was before, because they're oh shit, it actually matters now.
Yeah.
It was just this mystical thing that happened to other people. Oh, but now it's happened to us. Oh, we'll have to throw some investment into it then.
Maybe we should hook up with some red teams, right? Maybe we should hook up with some dirty rotten criminals. And after they've just done someone, we say, could you just pass their details on? Because like,
yeah.
Anyone you've ransomwared recently?
That's like a recruiter, but in an even worse sense.
Okay, maybe we'll not go down that road. But so what I got out of kind of talking to the policeman, I think, was that he said, yeah, but what it does do, I mean, regular martial arts, is it builds confidence and it leads you to making better decisions. So that choice to get a taxi home that night on kind of gut instinct of I don't want to walk through the park, or feeling that you can walk somewhere, but walking with confidence, that it's a transformative general effect on people. You know, they're not actually going to get into many martial arts fights in the park, but they are going to have their security improved by a kind of osmosis. So yeah, to anything that builds confidence, I think, was good.
I guess it's just that kind of thing of, you know, what once people are... Also, I think it's one of those things, almost like, you know, health and things like that, scary things that people want to block out. They do it on purpose, and their mind sort of creates that space there where it just doesn't make it approachable because it's been blocked out for the... Because they think they're protecting themselves, you know, they don't want to mentally even consider the fact that they could be hacked. Because it's so intrusive, and you know, where it was say in the 90s and oh no, my computer's been hacked, oh that's funny, now someone's changed my document and there's like some sort of stupid image in it or GIF or something, but now it's like, oh shit, I've been hacked, all of my data and everything about me has just been gathered by someone. So even to think about that prospect is so scary. But I guess a lot of people now, especially, you know, with people that have got their lives on their smartphone, they just go, oh no, I don't even want to think about that. You know, I'll just pretend it's fine.
A degree of denial and avoidance, which
I think definitely,
we'll talk about with Kate. But there's also, as Air Force guy said, people are extraordinarily bad at judging risk, and so there were lots of interesting reactions to that. One that I thought was interesting was the very glib reaction from. So I said, "Well, it's unavoidable. I mean, getting hacked is inevitable." Yeah. And that's a very interesting kind of resignation or learned helplessness going on there. It's like, well, I can't do anything about it. One guy said, well, I don't really worry about it any more than getting run over by a bus. And I kind of thought, well, hold on, but you've got much more control over some of those things than, you know, it's a little...
Yeah, you can choose not to look where you're going when you cross the road and, you know, things like that.
It's not quite just like, I don't know, being hit by a bolt of lightning might be a better metaphor or something. It's
Yeah, well, I guess I kind of, because I know the side of it, the really bad side of cybersecurity, where it's like, I've kind of, like, the sort of the roadblocks for the hackers in place. So I kind of expect the worst and then work back from it. But a lot of people, if I was to think about it from a personal point of view and an emotional point of view, just to imagine someone getting access to my data is like, oh, I don't even want to think about it. But in the same way, I've also, I guess it's kind of like being a doctor, right? Like, you don't want to think about your own health, but you'll care about others' health. So I guess it's kind of like, in that sense, I've used that professional understanding to better protect myself. But also, I don't like to think about it from a personal point of view, because I guess there's some sort of... Yeah, I kind of see my own personal emotional blocking there. It's not wanting to imagine myself getting hacked. But the difference that I've made, like many other professionals, is like, oh, I've chosen not to use the same password on every website, and I've locked everything down best I can, and I don't use the same email address for everything, and I give fake names on certain websites I don't trust, and things like that.
Yeah, your practical skills don't necessarily kind of mesh up with your psychological evaluation.
Yeah.
you just do it. I mean, like kind of keeping fit or something.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we talked a bit about money. I mean, the cost to society, court costs, rehabilitation. One lady mentioned, didn't she? Oh, it's cost society a lot, so why don't the government put more money into it?
I guess they kind of, when we think about like GCHQ, there's a lot of cybersecurity advertisement on places like LinkedIn, but it's all for businesses. There's nothing there for, because that's what costs money, doesn't it? If a business has then got to claim on insurance from another company in the UK, then it means that the government are getting less money. There's less money in the pot generally because it's costing the society the most money through businesses getting hacked. So whereas an individual getting hacked, there's nothing there that's going to cost them.
I don't know. That's really interesting. We need to dig deep into that because I kind of disagree intuitively, and I think there's, you know, I suspect there's data to the contrary. I'm just thinking of Ross Anderson's paper, or his team's paper on the cost of cybercrime. You know, how many trillions it was, and
it's loads. Yeah.
Just what the knock-on effects were, and you know, yeah, sure, GCHQ spin off the NCSC and stuff. First of all, I don't think their stuff's very good. I think it's pretty shallow. It's, you know, and yeah,
their basics kind of thing,
basic stuff, and it's more guards for the castle in, you know, protecting businesses. How many businesses are there? What, let's say tens or hundreds of thousands? How many people are there? I mean, let's take the UK, like 60-70 million.
I think we're at 71 million now, or something like that.
Good lord! Well, any cybercrime that's impacting at that scale, I just think it has to cost more than businesses being hurt, but you don't see it. It's not a visible cost in the same way.
I mean, there's no doubt that it costs a lot of money. What I was kind of saying in that sense is that cost does not then turn into a state cost. It kind of comes out of the pockets of individuals. And whilst that's absolutely tragic, the government are thinking, well, all the money we're losing is through businesses losing that, you know, getting hacked and losing revenue. Because that then has a more direct turn on the government.
That's interesting. There's a deep question there, is whose money is it? The taxpayers' money, or are you talking about insurance companies, or are you talking about, you know, critical infrastructure businesses? Who are the people? That goes right to the heart of what is civic cybersecurity, because to me, it's the people.
Yes, 100%, Yeah, I think that's the imbalance that there is there. It's like there is almost no investment in sort of the civic side of cybersecurity, at least in the UK, but I think it's a pretty international issue. It's almost like, you know, like in World War II, and everyone had to switch the lights off because the bombers were coming over. There's no unison there like there was then of bunker, I guess is the right word.
The old Blitz spirit.
Yeah, that's the one.
Together.
Yeah, so there's kind of that lack there, I guess, in general, and, you know, a lot of things of, especially sort of the way that people think now, it's sort of everyone for themselves, in, you know, that COVID sort of brought everyone back together slightly, but in other ways it drove people apart.
Technology in amplifies the I'm all right Jack attitude, doesn't it?
Yes, so yeah, I think there's a technology's got a lot to say for that isolation, at least the artificial isolation that people are feeling because of it.
It could be said that cybersecurity is currently a corporate privilege, and that the interviewee who seemed the most confident had obviously picked up their skills from work, probably, and they were a bit overconfident and they picked it up from sort of phishing training, but they'd been in the right place, they're already connected, they're in a company in a well-paying job that will train them. And so you've got an emerging split there. And it seems that for the rest of the people, there's Angela Rippon and us. that what's going on is that the most vulnerable people have the least financial ability to defend themselves, right?
But yeah, I guess it's also like that imbalance, especially in corporate situations. A lot of these businesses become their own ecosystems, especially when you think about universities and that kind of thing. You get like the king of the castle, in a sense. It becomes the IT manager who thinks he knows what he's doing, but is actually really sort of lacking in that area. I'm trying to think of a better way to put it, but generally those people with a lot of power and a bit of knowledge are the most dangerous, even from a corporate point of view, because they're wasting money that need not be wasted, and they still get hacked. But it's not until that point when it's too late that the person in charge sort of thinks, oh, we might need to change our policies and our practices here. Maybe I didn't know what I was doing.
That kind of came up about government. One guy said, didn't he, well, the problem here is that not only do people not trust government, I mean, that's a very American thing, right? But it's become more prevalent in Britain and Europe. And it's because of a competence gap. It's because we keep seeing two things, corruption, which is very evident now, and a clear lack of competence. You know, obviously with the online safety bill, what we were talking about, you know, was that colossal incompetence and just not actually not even understanding the basics of cryptography and how stuff might work. And so
that whole thing was just, it's, you know, we could go on about that for hours, but it's just a complete lack of understanding.
And in some senses, incompetence at scale is worse than inaction. And that leaves cybersecurity to two things. It's either to corporations who gain from exploiting weak security and stealing people's data. So that's no good.
And I guess that's why, you know, when we think about products like Microsoft Security Center, it's low-hanging fruit because it's an easy thing to learn. Everything's automated, so all these companies think, or at least the people in charge of those companies will think, I can use Microsoft products, learn how to use those, and then we can become security compliant with not much knowledge at all. And I guess that's why the uptake is so high, because these people don't have first-hand skill, or they have some but not a lot. So they will choose those products which are highly accessible and also fairly affordable, especially from a business point of view. And then they just become the low-hanging fruit for these businesses, and everyone will grab it up and get their security compliance certificates, security essentials from the government. That'll be that.
Without any deeper real knowledge of security. There's a horrible paradox there in which kind of regulation and compliance and so on drives down standards and substitutes a kind of pretend security. And it's difficult and complex. Well, we can explore that in other episodes, can't we? But I think, you know, what I felt at the end of those interviews was a little bit deflated myself, because I thought, well, this put unfunded charitable groups like us, who have the vision and the skills, but live in a society that, for whatever reasons, can't provide the money or the motivations for us to do our work. So, you know, it's not going to happen in the universities. It's not going to happen from the corporations. That each of them have their own principal agent problems and set of special interests that means that they can't be impartial and they can't tell the truth and they can't really impart that power, empowering knowledge. So we're going to have to be very, very creative to pull this off, but that's what we do. We hack shit.
I don't know, it's a really difficult thing to describe, because what we're doing is sadly not common from a civic point of view. So I think, again, and what I was saying about that kind of mental block, a lot of people don't like to consider the fact that their personal security is compromised, and people just don't understand it, so they choose not to try to understand it because they're scared of the implications. It's like people don't want to understand what the real dangers are and become educated, because they might not be able to sleep at night because they think that, I've used the same password on every application, and I've given so-and-so access to my laptop and I haven't given them a different account. Or
they hear the advice and then they go, oh my God, that's me. That's me. So let's hand over to Helen to sum up our conclusions about how, under our current conditions of poverty, diminishing attention spans, and fear of wrestling with the truth, we might take back a little bit of control over our technology. There's a reason our project is called The Cyber Show and not The Cyber Podcast or The Cyber Blog. There's a reason that we incorporate poetry, fashion, literature, and music alongside the technical materials, psychology, and philosophical analysis. Perhaps being British, where keeping calm and carrying on is still the done thing, we'll say it another way, that the show must go on. But what is the show? What is a show? Is it what we show each other each day? Honesty? Is it just showing up each day for work? Duty and persistence. But it's also how we do that. With a smile. With a bit of persona. With a pinch of salt. With music and laughter to help you on your way. And jokes and sketches with a hey, hey, hey. That's entertainment. And maybe entertainment is one of the last strongholds of education, in a world where other forms of education seem to be falling apart. Let Helen explain.
What shocks me most about what we discovered is the fact that a known figure, a podcaster, a broadcaster, or famous person going through the exact same information, albeit in a more performance-based way, is the preferred engagement method for civil cybersecurity. There is a deep mistrust in our society, but it seems so long as the person delivering said information is some sort of performer, makes the difference in how believable the content being delivered is. Coming from a childhood with the 2 a.m. lectures from the Open University, I find that method of media education far more credible. Those lectures were by fairly normal professors just doing their ordinary daily job with the added bonus and annoyance of the television studio and crew. Their excitement was only in the subject matter that they covered, which, to be honest, was fascinating enough to convince a child to stay up very late to catch one or two. Circa 2023, and we have giant versions of that, just like TEDx, with glamour, lighting, and audience participation. It's become a show. Why? Well, it's a symptom of just under 20 years of the rising and complex problem of misinformation, and with it, a complete disengagement in time-old education. Education must be a performance today for adults to engage with it, or just free, on the government in an economic crisis or a low taxation period. How have we ended up with a society that looks to entertainment for education? The allure of short, high-budget media masquerading as information, or something completely bonkers dressed up as fact, misinformation. Instead of avoiding these clear red flags when it comes to important knowledge, it seems today people are attracted to it, with the younger generations seemingly more so. All the colourful, loud, high-budget misinformation has not quite convinced the public at large that Sasquatches roam the wilds or the Mothman predicts natural disasters, but it has left a far more damaging, common symptom: mistrust of anything boring. If it's boring and official, just like a free government course, then somehow it's not a true source of knowledge and has been tainted. The government at large should be invested mostly in the protection and the education of its people. So why would people prefer glitter to the service they pay into and vote for? Well, politics hasn't helped the situation. It's been using the same slightly driven misinformation and con artist techniques for around 15 years on all sides in practically every country. And it's led to a great mistrust of all our institutions and governments alike. We look at state-sponsored privacy violations, environmental backtracks, and even apps that spy on our children for schools. And it's clear to see where this has been reinforced. The real trick here, though, has been the con artists with their alluring misinformation campaigns. To distract away from their con, they gaslight the media. It just shuts down any response to any madness at all. The trick, the con, and a very well-paying one. Society has fallen for a mass confidence trick, and one side effect is a need for glamour. Not one predicted by many, I am sure. The constant need for entertainment and enjoyment and overindulgence. Maybe we need more arms. Maybe a long period of austerity has limited us, leaving us starving and therefore susceptible to glamour. Maybe social media shortens our attention spans, and maybe when we're young, we want to write our own story of our growth and take ownership of the youth badge. With all of these causes in mind, there is one statement that reigns true. It seems it is a sad state of affairs when people will pay for a conference to find out how the world may be flat, but are unsure on attending one that keeps their bank account safe and their secrets buried. Perhaps we are unable to face the truth in the modern age, because all around us, it seems it is a bitter pill to swallow, but one which will only grow and sour more with time, the longer that we bury our heads in the sand. You're listening to The Cyber Show with Ed Navard, me, Helen Pease, and Andy Farnell. Thanks for listening.